We're back on the record.
Trinity guy? Did you know? I'm hazing. That's kind of pretty tough to prove anything for Trinity.
Ms. Smith, would you call your next witness, please?
Yes, Dr. Judith Cooper.
Dr. Cooper, did you hear the admonition I gave in regard to perjury?
Yes.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, please.
Would you state your name for the record?
Judith Cooper.
And by whom are you employed?
SWCA Environmental Consultants, which goes by SWCA for short.
And what's your business address?
It's 4320 Winfield Road, Suite 200, Warrenville, Illinois.
And what's your position with SWCA?
I'm the Midwest Regional Principal, so I'm responsible for overseeing our Chicago, Illinois, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania offices.
And what's your role with respect to this project?
So I previously served as office director in SWCA's Bismarck, North Dakota office. And since vacating that position, I continue to work on projects with SWCA's Bismarck staff, including this one. And so for this project, I oversaw the preparation of the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility and Route Permit application, as well as the individual task leaders who are in turn responsible for overseeing the field work, the report preparation, and then agency coordination.
And can you discuss your educational background?
Sure. I have a Bachelor's of Arts degree in anthropology from Penn State University, and then I also have a Master's of Arts and a PhD in anthropology from Southern Methodist University. And then my area of academic expertise is the prehistoric archaeology of the Great Plains and Rocky Mountains.
And can you discuss your work history?
I've been employed with SWCA for over 7.5 years, and I've worked in various roles with SWCA, and I've worked in multiple offices. I've worked in Denver, Bismarck, Austin, and now Chicago. And while at SWCA and when I served in my role in North Dakota, I served as project manager and also cultural resources lead. And I worked in this capacity on multiple pipeline projects. So as project manager, my duties would include things like client coordination, coordinating the natural and cultural resources fieldwork, overseeing report preparation, report review, coordination with agencies, overseeing permit application preparation. And then as cultural resources lead, I would execute fieldwork, oversee teams in the field. I would do write reports, review reports, and also coordinate with the various agencies.
And could you provide a general description of the project site environment?
So the project is located in east southeast North Dakota, and it's within an area that's generally characterized as being extremely flat glacial lowlands. And so the project is in an area that, when compared to other ecoregions, nearby ecoregions, it has fewer lakes and fewer pothole wetlands than adjacent areas. The project area specifically is an area that's generally quite flat to gently rolling lowlands, and it is predominantly agricultural fields. And then it also crosses the Maple River as well as the lower branch of the Rush River.
And what was the study area that was used for the project?
The study area was 1 mile wide with a half mile on either side of the center line, and then it also included the Fargo Pump Station as well as the Mapleton Junction site.
And can you discuss the approach that was taken to environmental analysis of the corridor and route for the project?
So the environmental analysis was performed primarily in two steps. And so the first step was to conduct a desktop review to identify any known natural or cultural resources in the project area. And we do this just through looking at known studies, reports, and any online available resources. And then this also assisted us in identifying any potential avoidance or exclusion areas in the project area. And this assisted with the initial routing of the project. And so the second step is to conduct field surveys. And so we sent our specialists out to conduct field surveys to document any natural or cultural resources within the corridor. And so for the natural resources surveys, SWCA biologists went out and documented any wetlands or water bodies, made wildlife observations, documented vegetation. And then SWCA's cultural resource specialists went out and documented any historic or prehistoric archaeological sites, any historic buildings or standing structures, and then any potentially sensitive tribal resources as well.
And how wide was the field survey corridor?
So the field survey corridor was primarily 200 feet, but it was widened in a number of areas to accommodate temporary workspace, and this is documented in Exhibit 3. And in addition, we also surveyed a two-acre area within the Cenex Prosper site to accommodate the Fargo pump station, and then we also surveyed a one-acre block at the Mapleton Junction site. And then we surveyed a 300-foot wide corridor along its 32nd Street Southeast, where there's a route adjustment, and so that area was widened to 300 feet. And this was surveyed after the original application was submitted.
And so just to summarize, the Exhibit 3, which shows the corridor that's being requested for approval by the commission, aligns with the survey corridor that you just described. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And talking about the siting criteria, could you discuss whether there are any exclusion areas in relation to the corridor and route?
There are no exclusion areas located within the corridor or crossed by the route.
And with respect to avoidance areas, can you discuss whether there's any avoidance areas in relation to the corridor and route?
So there are no avoidance areas present within the corridor or crossed by the route.
And will there be any significant adverse effects resulting from the location, construction, and operation of the project as they relate to the selection criteria set forth in the commission's rules?
No, and this is discussed further in section 17.3 of the application.
And we'll talk about the studies and the reports that were done earlier. You mentioned a number of studies that were conducted for the project. What survey reports were filed with the application?
So with the original application, we submitted a Class 1 and Class 3 Cultural Resources Inventory Report, and then there was also an addendum to the Class 1 and Class 3 Cultural Resources Inventory Report, and that addendum covered some surveys for additional temporary workspace, and this is all provided in Appendix F of the application. And then in Appendix D of the application is the Natural Resources and Wetland Delineation Report. And this included the results of our wetland and water body survey, our wildlife analysis, so our survey of threatened and endangered species and threatened and endangered species habitat, as well as the results of the tree shrub inventory and then also the noxious weed survey data.
And as far as the survey work that was completed after the application was filed, I believe you mentioned that the route adjustment and the Cenex site were both field surveyed after the application was filed. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And have supplemental or updated reports been prepared?
Yes.
And so we're going to walk through, just to make it easier, we're going to walk through each of the reports, and we're going to start with the initial reports that were filed in the application, and then we'll talk through the supplement just to make it clear. So starting with the Class 1 and Class 3 Cultural Resource Inventory Report, the one that was provided in the application, what were the results?
So during that survey, SWCA's cultural resource specialists identified one site, and then that site was recommended as not eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places. Our cultural resource specialists also attempted to relocate a previously recorded isolated find. We were unable to relocate that isolated find. However, that isolated find is considered not eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places.
And based on those surveys that were conducted, did SWCA recommend a determination of no significant sites affected in that initial report?
Yes, that's correct. And the State Historical Society of North Dakota concurred with that determination, and that is in a letter dated August 10th, 2015.
And that letter is already provided in Appendix E of the application, is that correct?
That is correct.
And what were the results then of the additional survey work? And this was the temporary workspace work that was covered in the addendum also provided with the application.
We did not identify anything during that survey.
And so since nothing was identified, there were also a recommendation of no cultural significant sites affected. Is that right?
Yes, we made a recommendation of a determination of no significant sites affected.
And has that addendum report been accepted by the State Historical Society?
Yes, the State Historical Society responded in a letter, said that they found the addendum report acceptable.
And that letter is also an Appendix E to the application?
Yes, that's correct.
All right, now we'll turn to Exhibit 10. And can you identify that exhibit for us?
That is the Addendum 2 to the Class 1 and Class 3 Cultural Resources Inventory Report.
And what are the results that are summarized in that report?
So during this survey, we did not identify any additional cultural resources due to the route adjustment.
And what was the recommendation then?
A recommendation was made of no significant sites affected.
And did you receive concurrence on that recommendation?
Yes, we did receive concurrence from the State Historical Society of North Dakota.
And is that concurrence provided in as Exhibit 11?
Yes.
And then if you'll look at what's been marked as Exhibit 12, can you identify that document for us?
That is the Class 1 and Class 3 Cultural Resources Inventory that was prepared for the Cenex Prosper Terminal site.
All right. And what were the findings of that report?
We did not identify any cultural resources, and we made a recommendation of no significant sites affected.
And if you look at Exhibit 13, can you identify that document for us?
That is a concurrence letter received from the State Historical Society of North Dakota, in which they agree with our findings of no historic properties affected and no significant sites affected.
And so just to make sure we summarize this, we've gotten survey reports entered into the record now that cover the entire project corridor and route. Is that right?
Yes.
And we have also gotten concurrence letters from the State Historical Society for all of those reports, and they're provided in the record.
Yes.
And if you'll look then, before we do that, what measures will NuStar employ if there are any unanticipated discoveries of cultural resources during construction?
So on behalf of NuStar, SWCA prepared a document called an Unanticipated Discovery Plan. And what that does is outlines the procedures that should be followed in the event that cultural resources are inadvertently unearthed during the construction process. And so this document was submitted to the State Historical Society of North Dakota, and they reviewed it and approved it as well.
And with respect to the natural resources and wetland delineation report that was provided in the application, just can you clarify what was covered in that report, what part of the project?
So the natural resources and wetland delineation report covered the entire route and corridor with the exception of the route adjustment to the far north next to the Cenex Prosper Terminal site as well as the Fargo pump station location.
So then if you look at what's been marked as Exhibit 14, can you identify that report for us?
Yes. That is an addendum to the Natural Resources and Wetland Delineation Report that was prepared for the route adjustment and the Fargo pump station located within the Cenex Prosper Terminal site.
And we'll walk through the findings in these reports, starting with the wetland and water bodies survey work that was done. Can you discuss those findings?
Sure. In the addendum report,
it would be in the initial report.
In the initial report, we identified two streams and we identified eight wetlands.
And were any additional wetlands or water bodies identified that are covered in the addendum report?
Yes, there are two additional wetlands identified during that survey and documented in the addendum report.
And were any, and where are those located in relation to the corridor?
One of the wetlands was identified within our survey area, but is outside of the construction corridor and will not be affected by the project. Another wetland was identified on 166th Ave Southeast, and this wetland will be crossed using HDD.
And no wetlands or water bodies were identified within the Cenex site where these facilities will be located?
That's correct.
And what measures will NuStar employ to minimize impacts to the streams and water bodies or wetlands? excuse me.
Sure. So there'll be four methods. The first is that the project will cross both the Maple River and the lower branch of the Rush River using HGD. And then also all wetlands will be crossed using HGD, and so there'll be no permanent impacts to wetlands as a result of the project. However, there will be some temporary impacts, but those temporary impacts will fall beneath the authorized thresholds of under Nationwide Permit 12.
And in addition, will you develop a stormwater pollution prevention plan?
Yes, so that's another measure that we'll take. We'll develop a stormwater pollution prevention plan, and there'll also be best management practices that will minimize erosion and sedimentation as a result of construction. And then finally, there'll be also be some general and specific construction-related mitigation measures for wetlands and water bodies. And these are outlined in the environmental mitigation plan, which is attached as Appendix C to the application.
And can you discuss for us the results of the wildlife surveys that were conducted and starting with the initial report?
So SWCA, as part of our survey, we went out and made wildlife observations and documented anything that we observed within the survey corridor. There were no threatened or endangered species observed, and the project is not anticipated to impact any threatened or endangered species. And then in addition, there were also no raptor nests observed within the half-mile study area.
And did those results change as a result of the further analysis that was done for the addendum report?
No.
And is the project anticipated to impact any state species of conservation priority? I don't think they're specifically addressed in the report.
No, there are no state species of conservation priority that were observed during our field surveys, and so the project is not anticipated to impact these species.
And what measures will NuSTAR employ to avoid or minimize impacts to wildlife?
So while the project is located outside the delineated whooping crane migration corridor, if construction is to occur during the spring or fall migration period, NuSTAR is committed to, if a whooping crane is observed within 1 mile of the project, they're committed to stopping construction until the whooping crane leaves the area and then notifying U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service of the observation. And then with regard to migratory birds, NuSTAR will employ standard methods, such as clearing the right-of-way prior to the nesting season or conducting nesting or nest surveys prior to beginning construction. And these are all discussed further in the Natural Resources and Wetland Delineation Report, which is included as Appendix D.
And based on the surveys that were conducted, are there any long-term negative impacts to wildlife anticipated?
No.
And can you discuss for us the tree and shrub inventory that was provided? And we'll start with the initial report.
Sure. So SWCA inventoried trees and shrubs within the survey corridor, and we followed the commission's tree and shrub mitigation specifications. And we did not identify any trees or shrubs within the construction right-of-way, so there'll be no mitigation needed.
And were any additional trees or shrubs identified in the survey work done for the addendum?
No.
And what were the findings of the noxious weed surveys? And we'll start again with the initial report.
There were no state or county-listed noxious weeds that were observed during our field survey.
And any changes to those findings in the addendum?
No.
And how will NuSTAR avoid the introduction of noxious weeds to the area?
NuSTAR will employ specific measures, and these are outlined in greater detail in the environmental mitigation plan, which is in Appendix C. This includes thoroughly cleaning all of the construction equipment prior to mobilizing it to the job site, cleaning the surface of vehicles that are known to have passed through noxious weed populations or any soil-borne pest-infested areas during construction, and then also just using any certified weed-free vegetative components for the project.
And with respect to coordination, did NuSTAR and through SWCA consult with local, state, and federal agencies and governmental entities, including those are identified in North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6906.0105?
Yes.
And were copies of agency correspondence provided in Appendix E to the application?
Yes.
And has SWCA received any additional correspondence that it would like to add to the record?
Yes. We received the concurrence letters from the State Historical Society of North Dakota, as previously discussed. And we also received an email from the Grand Forks Air Force Base, which confirms that they do not have any intercontinental ballistic missile launch sites or launch control facilities within 1,200 feet of the project area.
And if you look at what's been previously tabbed as Exhibit 15, is that the email that you received from the Air Force Base?
Yes.
And are you also aware that the North Dakota Department of Health submitted a letter directly to the Public Service Commission regarding this project?
Yes.
And if you look at Exhibit 16, to the best of your knowledge, is that the letter that was submitted to the commission by the Department of Health?
Yes.
And based on the consultations that have been conducted for the project, are any objections to the project by any state or federal agencies?
There were recommendations that were made, but to my knowledge, there weren't any objections made by any federal or state agencies.
And based on the recommendations made, the project is going to be adhering to those recommendations. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And with respect to permits and approvals, are all of the permits and approvals outlined in Table 2 and in Section 16 of the application, which is Exhibit 1?
Yes.
And we've already talked about a number of permits, the local permits, the crossing permits, but can you discuss if there's any other key permits and the status of those?
So there are still two permit applications that will be submitted. One is for a temporary discharge permit from the North Dakota Department of Health, and that is to authorize construction dewatering and then for a hydrostatic test water discharge. And the permit application needs to be submitted a minimum of 30 days prior to the discharge. And so NuStar anticipates submitting the application in April of 2016.
And that's just to ensure it's well in advance of any proposed construction, is that correct?
That's correct, to make sure that those permits are in place during construction in the event that construction dewatering is necessary.
Any additional permits?
The other permit that is necessary is a general permit for stormwater discharges associated with construction activity, and this is also a permit that's issued by the North Dakota Department of Health. And this needs to be submitted a minimum of 7 days prior to the start of land disturbing activity. In association with this, a stormwater pollution prevention plan will also be prepared, and we anticipate preparing the stormwater pollution prevention plan and submitting the application in mid-April of 2016.
So based on your study and review, the exhibits and testimony you have presented here today, and the statutes, rules, and regulations the commission must consider with respect to these types of applications, is a proposed facility of such length, design, location, or purpose that it will produce minimal adverse effects?
Yes.
Will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facility produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes.
Is the proposed facility compatible with the environmental preservation and efficient use of resources?
Yes.
And will the proposed facility location minimize adverse human and environmental impact?
Yes.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Pelham, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, or well, not quite afternoon. Good morning, Dr. Cooper. Just a couple questions for you, I think. You had mentioned that there were no objections by federal state bodies, but there were recommendations. Would you be able to take us through those recommendations? I know that you testified that the company was going to follow those recommendations, but you can tell us what those recommendations were.
Some of the recommendations would be recommendations from the Department of Health, and those are outlined in Exhibit 16. And the majority of this has to do with BMPs to be applied during construction activities, and especially regarding stormwater management and the handling construction near wetlands and water bodies.
Okay. And I noted in the application that the State Water Commission recommended contacting local floodplain administrators, and I believe that was done. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you know if there were any responses from any of those administrators?
I do not personally know whether or not we received those responses.
All right. And there's nothing in the application. I'm just more or less wondering if anything was received. And to your knowledge, nothing was received in response.
That's not my answer. I do not know whether or not it was received.
Okay.
I believe we can find out that information.
Yeah, it would be helpful to have if there were any comments that were received from floodplain administrators, and perhaps maybe we can make that a late filed exhibit, clarify that.
Your Honor, we don't have to make it a late filed exhibit. I can tell you there weren't, and they obtained their floodplain permits at the local level through the, and as I understand it, I've been told there really aren't true designated floodplain administrators. That's a State Water Commission issue.
Okay.
So, fair. But it's taken care of.
Good. Okay. Thank you. I don't have any other questions for you.
Thank you, Ms. Prescott.
Yes, Your Honor, I was just looking at Exhibit 4 as far as the Class 3 survey. The original route, it's my understanding that the Class 3 was performed on a 200-foot wide area, and that's centered on the route, correct?
Yes, for the most part. There may be some areas that the route has shifted slightly within that surveyed corridor.
And some were widened. How about the addendum portion, the 300 feet? That's not centered on the route. How would you describe that in relation to the route?
The addendum portion is immediately adjacent to, that's a road right there. So the route is abutting the road. However, in terms of the area that was surveyed, large portions of that area that would be typically surveyed falls within the road and would be completely disturbed.
So it's essentially 300 feet from the road south.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then, of course, the area for the proposed Senex Prosper Terminal site, that entire area was surveyed. So the only area, the way it's being depicted on the map, it appears that there's gaps in the survey area. However, that area is just the road that is not being depicted.
No other questions?
No further questions. Thank you. Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
Don't have much, but just one quick question, actually. So you covered the Air Force Base. How deep is the topsoil in this part of the state?
So in this area, based on our field studies, the topsoil is fairly deep. It's about 2 feet deep. But the plow zone doesn't extend that deep down.
Okay, so how far down do you know, and maybe this isn't a question for you, but how far down will they be taking the segregating topsoil from subsoil and that sort of thing?
So when this is outlined in the environmental mitigation plan, the plan is to go to a depth of maximum depth of 12 inches or to the base of basically where the tilled plow zone is.
And what is that, though? I saw that in that plan, but I don't know what the plow zone is.
I don't know the exact depth of the plow zone in this area.
How will the folks determine that?
Well, there should be a very clear separation between the plow zone, which is tilled in these active agricultural fields, and the soil beneath that.
Okay. We've never had, in a hearing that I've been part of on a pipeline, subsoil deeper than that, 12 inches, so it's never been an issue. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Dr. Cooper. I'm trying hard not to pass up this joke to a half. You ever watch The Big Bang Theory?
Yeah.
So are you related to that, Dr. Cooper?
No, I'm not.
All right, just curious. Just two quick questions. When did you do your weed survey?
We did it at the time that we performed the other surveys. So that was in May and in July again. And then we did another survey in August. And then the final survey that was performed for the northern portion was, I don't have the exact date on
it. No, that answers my question, because we had a witness in a different case said the same thing. There was no weeds, but they did their weed survey in January. I mean, right. Come on. So fair enough. And then we're not even close to the Whooping Crane Flatway from my previous.
We're memory. Outside, yes.
Like way outside, right?
I don't know the exact distance, but we are outside.
Okay. And I think SMU graduate?
Yes.
I was just there last weekend. Good school.
Oh, all right. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Commissioner Christman, please.
Well, the timing of the weed survey was supposed to be my question, so I don't know anything about the Big Bang Theory, so I have no other questions. Thank you.
Any further questions, commissioners? Ms. Smith, please.
I do have one follow-up. I had forgotten to follow up on a question that Commissioner Fedorchuk had asked. How many landowners, and we're doing it by sets of landowners, but how many sets of landowners are crossed by the project?
There are 10 sets of landowners plus Cenex.
Nothing further?
Nothing further.
Any further questions of Dr. Cooper?
No.
No further questions. Thank you, Dr. Cooper. All right, we're at that portion of the hearing where we take public testimony for public participation. But looking at the siting application attendance sheet, I see that no one has indicated that they wish to testify. However, I will again ask, is there anyone who wishes to present information? The commission, as you heard from all three commissioners, I think, encourages public participation, and this is your chance to provide information to the commission. Is there anyone who wishes to testify before the commission from the public? Seeing no one, is there any other evidence to present to the commission at this time, Ms. Smith?
I believe we've covered anything unless I've forgotten something that the commissioners had requested. Anything?
Well, the only thing would be that number 17 and 21 on the...
And I have not forgotten, and we will cover that most definitely.
So there's no late filed exhibits, I believe?
No.
Okay.
Oh, it is interstate.
Interstate.
Because it connects to interstate systems. As I understand, it has to be wholly cut off, segmented. Yes.
All right. Okay. Well, to conclude the hearing, did you want to file a brief or make some closing statements?
Maybe we should go ahead and address certification provision 17, since that needs to be on the record.
That right now?
Yes.
Okay.
So that the commission has the information and we can maybe address how that's going to be handled.
Okay.
So in discussions with Mr. Pelham, I understand that the intent of...
what exhibit is that again?
This is exhibit 9. And I will say the only thing I should have done is provide the initial language, so I apologize. But the way that it's presented now is what we're proposing. But the initial language had a discussion of the commission being able to stop construction if there were certain situations where kind of, as we interpret it, some sort of imminent harm would be occurring. And this is proposed based on language that comes out of 49 CFR Part 109, which is the provision that allows emergency orders under the PHMSA rules. So it would be all agencies, but PHMSA administrators could issue emergency orders in the event of an imminent hazard occurring. And this is the definition that's taken from the federal language. And our thought was we just wanted to give some clarity to when, because not every violation would warrant the need to stop construction. Of a violation could be addressed through the proper notice and handled in your normal course. And our understanding is this is what you were attempting to get to with your provision. And we would offer this language to clarify the provision a little bit.
Where did imminent hazard come from? That was
it's
term.
Not your term. It's the term that's out of the Code of Federal 49 right. CFR 109.
We have irreparable or significant harm.
And ours is more of an issue relating to damage to property and like it bore out of construction occurring during really wet conditions where there shouldn't be construction occurring. And just wanting to have the ability to, if the companies didn't have the protocols in place to do that, if our third-party construction inspectors see that, they can notify us, and we can hear about the conditions and the steps that the third-party contractor has taken to get the company to stop, and if the company won't stop, then we can. So that's where our language came from. This goes in a slightly different direction from that. In my opinion, but...
Yeah,
I'll just read, Commissioner, and I don't have a copy of this. I have it on my computer, but paragraph 17, as it is in the certification as presented to the company, it states, company understands and agrees that the commission has authority to stop project construction activities in the event of a probable violation of the siting laws, siting rules, or applicable commission orders if, in the opinion of the commission, construction activities are likely to result in irreparable and significant harm. As I understood it initially in discussions with Ms. Smith, the concern was with really the word probable violation and what probable meant, and the concern being, well, who's determining what is a probable violation, what is a violation? Because certainly if it was a violation, then the company agrees that, yes, then construction would stop. But what is a probable violation? What's the process involved with stopping the project? As to your comment just now, Commissioner Fedorchak, I do believe that it does go just beyond the property damage. It does go to environmental issues, you know, anything
right.
in our order. So it does encompass that. The language that's been submitted by the company, I've had a chance to review it, and I've reviewed it with Pat Fawn and to an extent, Alana, Jeff Kosako, commission staff. The definition of imminent hazard is something that's taken from the DOT regs, as Ms. Smith points out. It does, in some respects, in my opinion, does go to what is irreparable or significant harm, and it mm-hmm. does perhaps define that a bit more. And this is one of the things that I indicated to Ms. Smith that I would like some language to present and to deal with the probable issue with the word probable, and this was submitted, and certainly the commission has to take a look at it because paragraph 17, as I understand in discussions with staff, was recently determined and presented mm-hmm. and included as part of the certification.
The other thought I had, Commissioner Fedorchak, based on your comments, is provision 16 of the certification. So it really seems that you wanted something that the commission could make the determination that construction needs to stop. So the company knows it has to do it, but you get to. So the other option would be to omit 17. We wouldn't necessarily need that language and provide something tacked on to 16, because that's the concern you were trying to address.
But I don't think that is the concern. That
it's that plus probably the,
right.
the rest of the...
As I understand
okay.
it.
Okay. Provisions.
So maybe 17
is
appropriate.
But that's why they're back-to-back, is because yeah. we thought looked at 16 and said, well, what are we going to do
okay.
if something is... I mean, if they don't construct, then we wanted to make it clear that if there was a concern and the third-party construction inspectors couldn't get the company or the contractor to deal with it, that we would have the authority to do something.
So is this something we're going to come to a conclusion on today, or do we need some kind of an addendum to this?
From my perspective, I hear what you're saying, and I think that we can have a broader discussion back and tweak it back during a work session. But
from my viewpoint, we hold the cards. We just put a condition in the order that this certificate has grown to something it doesn't need to be sometimes, and so I appreciate the discussion, but at the end of the day, we can take and put a finding directly what we want in the order and put it in there, and so I think we can work it out later.
In here, I'm the one that actually found this language and proposed it, so if I can speak a little bit to it. You know, our guys and gals out there in the field, they're used to dealing with the PHMSA rules because almost all of our pipelines are interstate, and if you look at the end of that definition of imminent hazard where it talks about to property or the environment, you know, that's what PHMSA would latch on to theoretically. If there was an environmental or property damage, they would latch on to the end of that, and this is how they would issue what they would call an emergency order to stop us. So that's what I was just trying to do, it to make sure that our people out in the field weren't saying, okay, well, we're in North Dakota, and on the old Amoco line, we got to worry about imminent hazard. Okay, but on this little piece here, now I got to worry about, you know, so I was just trying to, frankly, so I apologize if it's caused an issue. I wanted to make it consistent for our people in the field that for property damage or physical injury or environmental injury, mm-hmm. this was the standard. And of course, as a company, if it ever got to this point, you know, we would have stopped it before it got there, you know, and things along that line. But so that's where that language came from.
So Commissioner Christman.
Well, I will say the flip side of that is for our inspectors and for us, we try and maintain some consistency too, and thus the certification document. And I get that the word probable might be hard to define, but then if we use this as our standard language, the next people say, well, we should switch that to probable because what's substantial likelihood? I mean, that's not very clearly defined either. So I don't have a great deal of heartburn one way or the other. I think it is a work session issue, but it seems like it's
following
kind
up
of
on,
a nitpicky.
Excuse me. Following up on Commissioner Kalk's recommendation or suggestion, perhaps this can be dealt with in the order after discussion between applicant and staff counsel.
And I just want to state for the record, to make it clear that the company, we're working this. This isn't something, well, the company doesn't think that they have to stop construction if there's a problem. It's just the wording on the language, and it's parsing through those details, I think, that needs to be resolved. So I just want to make it clear on that point to the commissioners.
Is that agreeable, Ms. Smith?
Yes, that's agreeable.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, what about 21 then?
That one I believe we've already really addressed previously, except that there may have been some questions, but the intent was to make it align with the ownership, and that's consistent with, I mean, if the route permit were transferred, any obligation of the prior owner that ends at the point of the transfer of the permit under the permit. So I think that's consistent with the legal application of the permit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, keeping the certification provision as it was for the life of the project doesn't necessarily contemplate the possibility of a new owner coming in, which that new owner then would be responsible for the operation and maintenance of that pipeline for however long they owned it. So I don't know, you know, whether or not the commission, quite frankly, you know, could require a company such as NuStar to perpetuity, infinity, be responsible if a situation involves where they do sell the pipeline to that new owner. That new owner has to go through the process with the commission that's established and then agree to adhere to the certification and the order, and would then be responsible. So I think that there may be you know, an issue with the language for the life of the transmission, and I have indicated that I am comfortable with the language on as proposed by the company, but at the same time I didn't feel it was my place to make an edict as to what the commission should be doing on the certification, and certainly would, obviously, the commission is going to make a decision on it.
Zach,
Commissioner Fedorcha.
Well, from my perspective, the company's brought out two points that are worth talking about, and I don't object to either of them. We'll work through it and figure out a path forward. So, but I do think that it's something that we all, with Pat and some of those who have put a lot of time into developing this language, need to talk about it in a less formal setting, but fully open to the public so you can be participating and listening.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Anything else to bring to the attention of the commission before we close this hearing? We're going to talk about briefing and stuff.
Okay.
Any evidence to bring to the attention of the commission?
No, Your Honor.
All right. You want to make a closing statement, Ms. Smith?
Other than we request that the commission, of course, grant our motion to amend the application to include the route adjustment that we've discussed here today, and to grant the certificate of corridor compatibility and the route permit for the project. Otherwise, we have no further statements except for we'll discuss the closing documents.
Yes. Let's discuss those now. You're going to submit proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order?
Yes, Your Honor.
A brief also? Or
we don't anticipate. Okay. We don't need a brief, no.
Okay. Do we need a timeline for that?
I was going to propose in the next 2 weeks, but the only caveat would be is if there needs to be discussion on the certification, the thought would be we want the order to reflect whatever the certification says. So We could submit a proposed order, then make adjustments after the working session if needed, if that's
the best way. That would seem to be most appropriate, to submit the proposed order first, and then you can discuss, and then the final order can include whatever it needs to be.
That sounds good. So we're planning the next 2 weeks.
Okay. Is that acceptable?
Yes, it is. If I may just briefly comment, there's one other matter that I would like to mention and bring the attention of the commission. The tree shrub mitigation plan is not a part of the certification. In discussions with staff, because there are no trees and shrubs on this construction right away, there is no need to have a tree shrub mitigation plan. So I just wanted to state that for the record, and that has been omitted from this certification. Other than that, I appreciate the information received today. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Closing comments from commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
Well, this was a really clean application and hearing and thorough. I appreciate, you know, getting things through things real deliberately like that. Sorry that none of the public felt that they needed to talk, but I guess that says something, too, that the public must be fine with this project as it's being proposed. So that's what we need. That's why we come out here. And thanks to everyone for a good hearing.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
I echo my colleagues' comments. Very clean hearing. Thank you for your work in prepping all this. The only comment I would say is that outside this whole certification document, I know that, Molly, you work with a lot of other cases, and for all of you, it's a living, breathing thing. It started out before I got to the commission probably 10 years ago with something simple where we put a couple of things in certification that the company would certify so you didn't have to ask the questions in the hearing, and now it has grown to this voluminous document. And there's value to it, but I think the companies, in this case and other cases, if you don't want to do something, you don't. And we'll deal with it in our own orders and things. So I'm really glad you guys are working this out. But this is something that's come up in more than one case where we've even had our legislative colleagues had other things to do, but where they've come back and there's some companies that feel they have to sign this certification, otherwise the commission's not going to do it. That's not the case. If there's something you don't want to sign, you don't sign it. And then Zach brings it to our attention, and we deal with it in the question and answer phase. So that's really why it was set up, to save time. Otherwise, all those things that you signed up on today would have had to have been asked the question. We'd have followed up on them and got them into the record that way. So it's a great document. I appreciate you making those recommendations. But just for those of you who talk to other people, that's the goal, is to save some time, not to hold people that you have to sign this. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crisman, please.
I think that was well said. I have nothing to add. Thank you, everybody, for being here, though.
Yes, thank you all. And for the record, we'll close this hearing, noting the correct time to be 12:10. This hearing is closed.